Good. The first piece in Parshas Re is Rabbeinu Bechaya, and he's bothered with the transition between Re'e, meaning a Lashon Yochid, to Lifneichem, which is a Lashon Rabim. So he says, Re'e Anochi Nosem Mechayom Brocho Klala. Omar, Re'e B'Lashon Yochid, Lifneichem Lashon Rabim. Why? He says, because Moshe here is speaking both with individuals and the public, meaning part of what he's going to say is relevant only to individuals, and part of it is relevant to the Hamon. So he says, Lefisha Brocha Vaklola Ne'etzola Mishnei Midos Shenibra Olam. Brocha and Klola come from, they come from the two Midas that the world was created, which is Midas Adin and Midas Arachamim. She'ein in yonim nigla rak liyichidim hamaskilim. Only yichidim understand it. Lekacham arei b'loshin yochid. So in other words, he's speaking to those individuals who can look past the chitzonius and see the more pnimiyistic aspect of it. So them he's telling, look at it, and he explains the word looking. He says, v'hu ri'iya be'ein ha-seichel. It means see in a conceptual way rather than in a physical way. Like it says, V'libi roh harbi chachmadas. My heart saw much chachmadas. So, and then on the other hand, Lefisha brocha klola are zeros lahamon. They are something which helps spur people to do right and to stay away from wrong. Therefore, he needed to speak v'loshen rabim and say lefnechem. So Rebbe Chaya is saying that the Lashon Yochid is used for the people who want to have deeper insight, and Lashon Rabim is for the Pashtun, meaning for everybody. And then he says you find the same thing by Re'ei Lemadite Eschem Chukim Mishpatim. See, I have taught you Chukim Mishpatim. So he says the same thing. There are the Chukim are only Shayach for Yechidim, and the Eschem is Lashon Rabim because the Torah itself and its commandments and so on were given to the rabbin. And I want to explain a little bit over here about, first of all, the way he says brocha and klola come from the two midas, which are midas adin and midas arachamim. The word brocha and klola, at its most basic level, we just think of it as good things and bad things. But actually, it's not at its... it has a very specific good and bad at the root of it. A bracha is the koach of ribui in the bria. In other words, we have four different ways in which things develop in the world. One is that things degrade. In other words, you start with five apples, three of them rot, four of them rot, and so on. So there is a hefsid and kloya. That's one way, or that's one thing that happens in the dynamics of existence. A second thing would be preserving what there is frozen, the way we would see a rock. In a reasonable period of time, stays what it is, and that's that. We also have a transformation of yesh miyesh. So I can take the rock that is, I can grind it, and I get powder that's equal to the rock. And then we have things that can actually multiply. For instance, if I take a seed and plant it, I get many, many plants out of it. A person, one couple, can have many, many children. So we have bracha. And then a fifth thing, I guess, which doesn't exist, is yesh me'ayin. Things just come into existence from no place. So let's focus on the two things that are more relevant. Once we have the bria, we have the things over here. So bracha is the koach of the bria to be misrabe. Yesh mayin doesn't exist, existed once at Bria Solom, that's it. But the ability for things to produce more than was there before is that's a divine type of that's a divine hashpah. We're used to it because technically there is no yesh mayim. So even the seeds that grew many plants, the scientists will say, well, it took minerals out of the ground, it took water out of the ground, it took this out of this. If you add everything up, everything stayed the same in the big picture, which is technically true. But in terms of the plant, I had one apple tree, I now have a dozen apple trees. I have many dozen apple trees. I had one stalk of wheat, I now have 10 stalks of wheat. So in terms of presence in the Bria, there's a koach haribui. That's sort of divine. It's not in the chemistry lab, you can only get one wheat out of one wheat out of one wheat. You could change the wheat to flour, but it's still going to be the amount that's there. Biology carries in itself the site of bracha, which is it's something that it's the koach of ribui. Zohar says gematria bracha, because a zohar carries in himself, a woman usually carries one egg and you usually have one child, so the woman kind of limits at each time one child. The man zera is the zohar has the ability to have hundreds of millions of the nekudas of zera. The nekeva limits it to x amount. So a zohar is begat a bracha, because the ability of one to produce many lies in that. That's the concept of bracha when it says that Kadosh Baruch Hu should be nisrabe. The kavanah the Rishonim say is there should be nisrabe, meaning from one drop of divine illumination, much understanding of Kadosh Baruch Hu should come out. That's the concept of bracha. Klola is not bad as much as it's limited. In other words, an animal like a mule is not it doesn't have any bracha to it. It doesn't produce offspring. It's barren. So ora means the mule is the mule is the mule. That's it. There's not going to be more mules coming out of this mule. The word nekeva has three meanings that are identical in this case. The word nekeva, let's take it in a place where the easier one. It says nokva lischarcha. Nokva lischarcha means identify the schar. Prescribe it. Give it to me exactly the way it is. No obfuscation. So it's $100, $100. That's it. In other words, the nokva lischarcha means don't leave it open-ended. I want to have a clearly set price that's not going to start sort of floating with your desires and needs. That's nukvali. The word nekeva, besides obviously the nekev association, but the nekeva is also one that limits the zera of the zohar. The zohar, the amount of zera in the zohar is in the hundreds of millions. It's an incredible amount. What makes one child out of it, what limits it to usually one child, is the nekeva. Cursing HaKadosh Baruch Hu says vayikov shem Hashem, it means it's a klola, because what you do is you make the finite out of the infinite. So the word nokva, vayikov, klola, nekeva, and the defining are all, in this sense, they're all the same. They are the limits around something. And therefore, bracha is the ability for something to be unlimited. In its way, wheat is unlimited. One wheat stalk can bring dozens of wheat stalks, who can bring times dozens and times dozens. There's a certain element of limitlessness mitzav there. And then that's the midas hachesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bria, the ability for things to keep growing and expanding without being limited. And then you have the midas hadin, which freezes things in this place. Like it says shakai, That is, it says the world, the skies were nimtachos, and they put a stop to it. We also, I mean, in a more conceptual sense, we think Midas Hadin is, we think of it with a sternness to it, we think of the kind of toughness. Midas Hadin starts with the first thing, with the statement, no free lunches. Midas HaChesed is, if it's an open house and it doesn't cost money, so there's no limit to the amount of lunches that you can take. Realistically, even if it's a free kiddush, you can't come in and take all of it. But the ma'isa, you can. There's no limit. Midas Hadin puts a limit for every lunch, for every $100 you bring in, you can take a lunch out. For every day that you work, you can take a lunch. It sets limits. Have you met those limits? Did you give enough yesh for the yesh miyesh to happen? Those are already follow-ups of Midas Hadin. But the real Midas Hadin in itself is the limitation. There's a famous joke in Eretz Yisrael. The Goyen's wife was known to be a very colorful and eccentric person. So when they produced the first car in Israel, of blessed memory, there was a Sosito, Autocars, there was they started most of the time manufacturing cars in Israel. They presented Ben Gurion with a free car. So he said, ethically, it's wrong for him to take gifts, and he can't do that. So they were a little, they know what to do. They said, you know what, Mr. Ben Gurion, we're selling you the car for 5 lira. So his wife turns to him and says, buy two. The Midas Hadin in its Shoresh is putting a limit, a circle around it, and saying things in this world, things are not there for free, and everything has to be paid for, and accounted for, and so on and so forth. So that's the Indian over here of the Baruch and Klola, that their Shoresh comes from a deeper Midah. I want to explain now how it applies after the mitzvahs and so on. Gadol Baruch Hu was saying, if you do good things, you get good, and if you do bad things, you get bad, and the brach and the klala. This idea of brach and klala that we described, how do we understand it? So, the world consists of a physical layer and a pnimius, that's ruchnius. Mitzad the physical layer, there's no room for bracha really. The yisoidus of the physical world is conservation of matter and energy. Masha hoya hu masha yia, olo maritza medes. In the realm of the material and the physical, there's no bracha. Things are frozen and set. Bracha is the bringing in of a sort of divine nekuda into the world. In mitzad ruchnius, mitzad spirituality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the world from nothing, and the Seder Bracha lies in that world. So in mitzvahs daveris, besides the Schar Onesh, there's the element of Bracha and Kalala to it. A person who is in Bracha mode is Nisrabe, and a person who's not in Bracha mode is not Nisrabe. That is just how Baruch and Klala relates to the mitzvahs naveis, which is what the pasuk comes to talk about. Another nekuda that I want to point out in Rabbi Nebuchaya, he says that it says re'ei, that it's for yechidim, as opposed to lifneichem, which is for everybody to understand. So the first thing is, I mean, the Rabbi Nebuchaya has in a lot of places that both are true. There's a literal meaning, and that's meant to spur a person to do right because it's productive, and it shows itself to be bracha and so on. And then there's a pneumistic oifen, which deals with midas and so on. I want to add another knach to what he says about yechidim and rabbim. He himself also says that it's for yechidim. We don't assume there's only one God Adar that will understand these things. We assume there are Yechidim as opposed to Hamayim. So once you have two people, grammatically Lashon Rabbim applies as well. So it's not a terrible kasha because the pasuk is just emphasizing it. But I would like to sharpen the point that he makes. In things that are material, physical, and visible to the senses, then the rabbi, we understand the rabbim that their understanding is common to each other. For instance, if we all point to a piece, to a piece of paper, and we say this is red, even though we can never be sure that everybody sees the red exactly the same way, but the fact that everybody calls this red and this brown and this yellow and this green means that the understanding is common, maybe even called objective, and we're all tapping into it, as if it would be much like a website and we're all just tapping into the same website. So the level of understanding, the statement, if you do mitzvahs, things will go well, if you do everything, will go bad, is a mitzvah. And it's a common understanding to all that tap into it. The understandings that are deeper, even if a dozen individuals understand them, but it's each yachid's own havana. Because there's a lack in those things that are common, we all share the same. So things that we can that we can perceive with sight and sound and etc., we call those common, and therefore when it's given everybody together. The understanding that we have in the panemius is always personal, since it can't readily be put into words and it can't be absolutely described. It's every single person, it's every person understands it himself, with his own knach, with his own sense of things and so on. I'll give you a muscle in something, let's go out of Nista and let's go on some Nigla. There's a certain level of kasha and teretz, certain types of kasha and teretz in Gemara that you could find Sfarim, all the Sfarim will have the same points. Many Sfarim will have the same points in Kasha Teretz and same Pilpul. Then you find also something like that we call Lamdis. If you look at Reb Shimon or Reb Achber or Reb Chaim, it's never the exact same point. It's a point with a different, what we call, knage to it, because they're not describing, like, if you say, Taisus is a Kasha and Teretz, Vim Taima, over there it says that you do call the Gava. The Yishleima, this is talking about Chluk Yichol Es Emes, it's talking about Chluk Can't Be Emes, and so on. Those are facts that will you can translate them in anybody's language. It's the same point. That one place it says Chluka, one place it says Yikolom Gava, one place it says Yimunach. What are the Klolim? Well, Klol A is like this, Klol B is like this, Klol C is like this. Those are facts, that type of methodology is international, so to speak. It's above any particular person, and it, you know, everybody can tap into it and say. The final lumdis is different. Reb Shimon or Reb Chana may be saying fairly the same thing, but each one has a very different flavor to it because it's a personal understanding. So on the one hand, it's deeper, it's finer. On the other hand, it can be much more misleading, because if you can't share something with somebody else really, then maybe it's a figment of your imagination. Maybe it's not real. Maybe it's not there. So, but I just wanted to give a muscle for it in terms of things that we can actually, that we live with it, the type of learning that we relate to. The next piece is a piece about Bechira, and it's from the Rabbi Bechai also. And it says, the pasuk here says, Re'eya nosen lefneichem hayom brochen klola, and so it says like this. Hine, nizbaya bepasuk zeh, sha'ashuz fa'bechira sha'adam. This pasuk tells us that bechira is in our hands. Everything is totally in our bechira. He also brings a pasuk that says, miyitein v'ilavavim zel yosei. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, halavai, who would give their hearts to be like this, always fearing me like this, meaning HaKadosh Baruch himself is saying that I can't dictate it, well not I can't, but I won't dictate it, and I only wish, quote unquote. because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, would be goes a precious like Russia, then he would, then it doesn't make any sense that he would command us to do something and then give us chara, onish, whatever it is. I just want to add a point here. One of the things that is almost impossible to determine by thinking, or even my research, is a person being determined versus free will and so on. This is not proving free will. It's proving that the Torah postulates free will. It's saying that from the Torah itself, we see that the Torah takes free will as a given. It's important to make that distinction. If somebody comes along and says a person must have free will because or else how he gets rewarded or punished, well, who says? Well, maybe you're right. It's only the Torah works. When a person comes along and says, since God is almighty and can do everything and wants everything and so on and so forth, then man has no free will, then we say no. But the Torah says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself says, oy, I only wish I had a way to have them have Yerush Shemayim. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not run the world using his total abilities, but he gives us the room for Bechira. That's Mucha from the Psukim, that's what the Torah assumes and so on. So the first point he makes is, since the Torah itself is full of Schar and Onesh, there's no point to it. It doesn't mean anything. Then say it as a, then don't give it as an if. Im Shemua Tishmo Tzvayisa Shnechem Tzavash Chayom. Say Atem Tishmo or whatever it is. That's one point. Then he says, that's the reason why the Torah starts at the very beginning with a description of free will. It says by Adam HaRishon when he ate and ate Tadas, Hein HaAdam HaYikech Nadas Tovara. Man became like one of them, Nadas Tovara. So he says, what does that mean? He says, man is the only one in the entire creation. Not animal, nor malach, have a koch abchira. So he says, every single entity in this world is fixed. And he says, but he gives a fascinating distinction, Rabbi Nebuchaya, between the fixing between the fixing of the malach and the fixing of the animal. The animal is fixed into its behavior simply by teva. In other words, its genes dictate to it what it should be doing. So its habits and the docility of the limb doesn't come out of any kindness. It's programmed to that way, as is the ferocity of a tiger. That doesn't. An angel is different. An angel is forced by its awareness and its seichel. Let's give an example, just so we have a sense of it. Let's take something that's not bad or good, but rather healthy, not healthy. Smoking cigarettes, being the disease it causes is not readily seen while you smoke the cigarette, we have a bechira to it. This pain of a pin or a needle is evident as you're pushing in. That it's not healthy to push a pin into yourself is evident while you're pushing the pin into you, and therefore there's no real room for bechira in the normal sense of the word. Whereas smoking, since I need to think about it, and I need to sort of conjure up the image and think about it, so on and so forth, I do have bechira. A malach sees the metzias and the emes and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in one shot, so there's no wiggle room. It's not, a malach doesn't do it in a way, he's not programmed to do it, but since he's in total perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the emes and tov and ra, then he has no bechira. So a malach does not have bechira, and that's why you find occasionally, as far as speak about it, you find gemaras that say certain malachim were punished for doing X or Y or Z. It has different hezberim, but one hezber in light of what he says is, as opposed to an animal that really has no bechira, and it's just a question of how strong the program is. The the a malach, it's just like, let's take the mashal again with the pins. When I said I don't have bechira when I have pins sticking, I can stick pins in myself. People stick needles in themselves. So I can, I do have that bechira, but on a practical level, that koach habechira in itself doesn't mislead me or misguide me. So a malach seems could do it, but his perception of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is so powerful and of emes that it's an automatic no-no, except for those cases that Gemara, for whatever reason, points out, and we have to understand those Gemara. So I just want to point out that this gives us this distinction between a Malach's Hechreach and a Baal Chai's Hechreach, gives us a lead into understanding something about Malachim.
Yes, when we say that animals don't have Bechira, what exactly do we mean by saying it doesn't have Bechira?
There is no process, in other words, let's go through the brain. When a person sits down, and in front of him is vanilla and chocolate ice cream. So what happens is he conjures up the taste of vanilla, conjures up the taste of chocolate, whichever is stronger wins, and that's what he does. A person has homework to do, or he has a movie they like to see, so it's just a question of the pain versus pleasure. There's no bechira being exercised at that stage. But a person has good and bad, and he needs to choose my ruchni part. In other words, I have a one chocolate chip cookie left over, and I really like them. Now, I have the physical self that enjoys and wants it, and giving it to somebody else takes that away from me, versus the sense of right and goodness to give it to someone else who didn't have, and so on and so forth. So there I struggle between two things, and then some third koach in a person, the koach hachra, it has some name to it, it makes that decision. That's koach bechira. In other words, it's a conscious choice. The mind is not acting simply to tally up how many flavor buds are turned on by vanilla and chocolate. When we say I have to choose the vanilla ice cream and chocolate ice cream, that word choosing is kind of a misnomer. I mean, it's simply I'm trying to figure out, do I have more time for vanilla or do I have more time for chocolate? Choosing means the Koach HaSeichel has to make a decision between one world and another world. Which self am I going to? That's sort of where the Koach. It's like, for instance, let me give you another example, something a little easier to understand. When you're deciding, when a doctor is deciding to use, let's go back. Let's say an engineer is deciding how much steel is needed to support a certain building. So he calculates, makes a cheshbon, and then based on that dictates how thick the beam, the columns, and how many, etc. When a judge is trying to decide a case, there's no real way to quantify the side. He thinks of both sides, and then there's a certain koach hachra, which is machria one over the other. You say your sense of justice is that this side has right. We're talking about a case that both sides have things to stand on and so on. So that koach hachra in a person is the koach habchira. And he says like this, he says, so Adam is unique in the world because he has these two kochos. As long as medayik the Rambam it says that in Aleph Beis of Yisrael Torah, he says that man, that there's nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim and Oretz and in between. And very strange, Shemayim and Oretz in between. It's poetic, sort of, but what does it mean? And I think the Rama means, and I saw later, I think the Maral says something very similar. The Rama means, Shemayim means Malachim. You know, there's a having to think that Malachim, there's a having to think that in Oretz, because it's so physical, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not there. And in between is man. In other words, Adam is the Bria that is the in-between Shemayim and Oretz. He doesn't have a fixed Metzias, but it's a judgment call. And therefore, that's where Adam is. So Adam is the only one who has Bechira. Bechira means the ability to to choose between two completely different systems. And then he says, the cause of Rambam Zal, Al titame hich ome kol ha-shachofta shemashe shayim v'aretz. It says in the Pasuk that that everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, he does in Shemayim V'aretz. So he says, and it's basically paraphrasing Rambam, certainly whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, he can do, even though we have a shus. He says, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu can turn nature upside down, so too a man can, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could certainly override a person's bechira, not give up a person's bechira, and so on. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose not to. It's just like if a king gives somebody, endows somebody with X amount of money, the money didn't leave the king's rishus. He's just endowed on the person. If you take a look in the Rambam, when he speaks of bechira, he says, "Rishus nesuna loy," that the rishus is given over to him. The giving over of the rishus means, yes, we have it, but it's endowed. It's like the difference between somebody who runs for office. The electorate gave him the office, not the person on top of him. But in the case of, so for instance, in a state where you elect attorney general, so the attorney general works for the governor, let's say, but he's elected by the people. But in a monarchy where you're appointed as attorney general, means you are given those rights, but they're not yours inherently, and they can be taken away. Here also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man bechira. It's not that man has bechira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't do anything about it, can't take it away, whatever it is. It's given to us, and he says, and therefore we're responsible for our actions as a result of bechira. That's the that's where bechira comes in. So he's quoting the Rambam on this, that when we say that bechira is man has free will, we always have to bear in mind it's true, but it's always an endowment. It's never inherently ours, and therefore the Moshe Rabbeinu times HaKadosh Baruch Hu away from Paro, it's he can always override it. He can choose at certain times for whatever reasons, like Rambam explains, to override it. Okay, I think we'll maybe one more piece. There's a Sfarna here which is interesting. It's a small piece, but he says Re'e. He's also worried, what does it mean Re'e? See. So he says Habita Re'e Shaloye Inyon Chal Oifen Beinini Kamo Shemine Garov. So he puts in a very powerful line over here what it means, what the Pasuk tell you. When a person does something out of rote, the feet go by itself. In other words, the place that's called habit is the feet. There's raglayim and hergel. And a person does it without looking. Even if his eyes are open, when you walk someplace that you know, and you know there's no traffic coming, you walk without looking at anything. I mean, your eyes are open, but you're thinking about what you're thinking because you don't need to. The feet themselves follow the pattern that you set. When you're making a new step or a new move, you need to see. Like it says, Chacham Eina Bereisha means a Chacham is someone who acts by thinking where, like headlights, where he's going to and then walking. So he says most people act at Ofabeni. In other words, we are what we are. It's a sort of a happy mediocrity and that's it. Re'e means think about it. In other words, move forward with pre-thought. And you know, is this the best thing I should be doing? Is this the better thing I should be doing? And so on and so forth. Okay, we'll hold it here.